Peter B. Collins with news and comment here on Wednesday, February 15th, 2012. This is my last news and comment for the next few days. I'll be traveling. Sunday morning ever, and Sunday passing by. I'll be working here forever, at least until I die. Damn if you do, damn if you don't. I'm supposed to get a raise next week, you know damn well I won't. Working Americans will continue to get about an extra $20 in each bi-weekly paycheck for the remainder of this year because Republicans have given up their struggle to block the president's desire to extend the payroll tax cut. And as you know, if you're a regular listener, I'm not the biggest fan of this payroll tax cut. I don't think it creates jobs, and that really is the biggest need that we have in the current economy. But given the political landscape, I acknowledge this is a victory for President Obama. And when they gave us the two-month extension back right before Christmas, I was concerned that this would be another showdown where Obama would blink and the Republicans would take advantage of him. And he held his ground for a change, and it was the Republicans who blinked. After, you know, all kinds of diversionary tactics and raising the Keystone XL pipeline, demanding that it all be paid for, the Republicans decided, I guess, that the polling is too strong against them and agreed to extend these payroll tax cuts for the remainder of this year, about 160 million Americans. And they say it's $20 a week. I think it's closer to, you know, $40 a month. At any rate, it is surprising to see the Republicans give up this particular ghost. And it remains to be seen if they will also permit extended unemployment benefits to be paid. This is another issue that really sticks in my craw, because unemployment insurance is something that anybody who doesn't have a job now paid for when they were working before. And while the benefits have, you know, probably been paid out longer than people were entitled to under the original plan, and the federal government has had to backfill the massive amounts of money that the states have paid out, the bottom line for me is it's not a giveaway, it's not a bailout, it's something that people are entitled to. And at a time like this, when so many people are hurting and it leads to foreclosures and loss of health insurance coverage, inability to pay for kids' college, and those sorts of things, well, I think that I prefer to see it pass than to have Republicans win once again. Other news today from Washington, and this is a mixed bag, because I support nuclear disarmament, and I would like to see us seriously cut back our nuclear arsenal and ultimately eliminate it. Of course, that's not a very popular position these days, and I caught about 3 minutes of Rush Limbaugh's show this morning, and he was busy excoriating the president for plans to reduce our nuclear arsenal. Now, under current agreements with the Russians, we have agreed to limit our arsenal to a total of 1,550 deployed strategic nuclear warheads. And the Obama administration is proposing, over time, to honor the president's pledge that he made back in 2009 to, quote, pursue the elimination of nuclear weapons. Now, there's a lot of room, a lot of wiggle room in pursue elimination of nuclear weapons. But taken as a goal or an aspiration, well, it's better than nothing. And we peaked at about 12,000 nuclear warheads back in the 1980s, and we dropped below 5,000 in 2003. And I caught Limbaugh trying to combine this issue with others. And in one blast, he said, Obama has wrecked the economy. Now, that's not true. Bush did that, and Obama has struggled to put it back together, unfortunately using Wall Street people who could have worked for Bush. And then he said that he wants to cut military spending and reduce the size of our military. Well, that's narrowly true, but the net-net of Obama's budgets for the next couple of years would only cut defense spending in real dollars by about 1%. And really what Obama is proposing is to slow down the rate of increase in defense spending. And then the coup de grace, the capper that Limbaugh added to this troika of comments, was that he wants to reduce our nuclear arsenal, and that somehow having only 500 or 1,000 nuclear warheads makes us more vulnerable to some sort of attack. And if we need nukes at all for a deterrent effect or for the mutually assured destruction that would occur if someone else launched a nuclear strike on us, we don't need 300. We don't need 500. Probably a couple of dozen would do it. But to a fathead like Limbaugh, it's the numbers that really matter. I've gotten feedback recently from a handful of listeners who feel that I accept the Obama administration and the Western corporate media's assessment of the conflict in Syria. And I think that in recent interviews with Professor Elaine Hagopian and with Professor Stephen Zunis, we offered you some alternate views. I also, in the Zunis interview, raised the comments made by Webster Tarpley, who asserts that it's the CIA that is driving the anti-government forces against Bashar Assad in Syria. And in my coverage with Sibelle Edmonds in the Boiling Frogs interview series, we've also presented voices who challenge the conventional reporting on the situation in Syria. And I had a lengthy exchange recently with a listener named Tony, who and in one exchange I acknowledged that since I'm not in Syria, I don't really know who the snipers are. I don't know who is the Free Syrian Army and who is actually challenging the government. I do know that it's government tanks that are mowing civilians down randomly in the city of Homs. And beyond that, I think that there's a lot to learn. I want to recommend Russ Baker's website, whowhatwhy.com. And posted there today is a lengthy piece of enterprise journalism taking a look at the various reports and some of the anomalies and asking a lot of important questions. And a lot of comparisons are made to the uprising in Libya, which was portrayed in the American media as just a freestanding citizens' uprising, and we know that there were many foreign influences there. And Russ Baker's report compares the calls for Gaddafi's assassination, or at least his removal from power, with those for that are currently, the voices currently calling for the replacement or removal of Bashar al-Assad in Syria. And I think that Baker's point is really important. He says, you notice that the U.S. doesn't call for the leaders of Bahrain or the leaders of Saudi Arabia to leave office and to make way for reforms. And so it's very important to note that the selective attention on the Assad regime and the calls from Western powers and Arab powers alike for his demise, I think, are important signals. So there's much more in the report. Go to whowhatwhy.com and absorb that for yourself. And someday we'll be able to get, I think, definitive understanding of exactly what has occurred. In Afghanistan, NATO and the United States have finally acknowledged that we killed 8 young Afghans in an airstrike in eastern Afghanistan last week. The incident occurred on February 8th in a remote mountainous area of Najrab district of Kapisa province. And you may have heard about this. The Afghan government described those who were killed as civilians and children. And initially, NATO said that they were young men, perhaps even boys, but they were armed, and that based on observations of soldiers on the ground and camera footage, they appeared to pose a threat to forces operating in the area. Air Commodore Mike Wigston offered the explanation and apology. We accept that 8 young Afghans died that day. The decision to bomb this group was made because they were seen as adult-sized and moving in a tactical fashion, and the commander was worried that they were in a good position to attack nearby NATO forces. This is another example of information, intelligence, that is used to target destructive, deadly strikes. And the description we just heard sounds like it was a drone that monitored these people. And from the sky, it's hard to tell the difference between a short adult and an average-sized or even tall teenager. And this is just the latest event of so-called collateral damage, where the U.S. occupation, instead of winning the proverbial hearts and minds, creates the next generation of terrorists. Here's a story breaking today on February 15th. In the Central American country of Honduras, a prison has been the scene of a fire where more than 300 people have been killed. They're still sorting through the devastation, 357 people missing, and this is a prison about 45 miles north of the capital in Tegucigalpa. Survivors said that people were, on fire. Humans were ablaze. They were trapped in their cells. And we don't have a cause at this time. They say they're looking into whether an inmate started this fire by lighting a mattress. That's a sad situation. We'll keep an eye on that one. Back here in the United States, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com reporting that there may be election fraud in the Maine caucus, where Mitt Romney pulled out a victory by only 194 votes. Second place was Congressman Ron Paul. And I encourage you to read the story at Bradblog because, we always hear Republicans warn about liberals committing voter fraud. And the most recent person convicted of voter fraud is the Republican Secretary of State, the top elections official in the Hoosier state of Indiana. And despite that, all we hear are, there are dead people on the rolls, and without a picture ID, we can't be sure that people are voting honestly. Well, there are really very few instances of actual impersonation of a voter, voting for a dead person, people who vote twice. It rarely happens. But the Republicans try to focus on that, as in my view, they have committed massive election fraud, like the 2000 and 2004 presidential elections, the Supreme Court justice election in the state of Wisconsin last year, some of the recall elections, the efforts by Scott Walker to game his recall election coming up in Wisconsin, just to name a few. And it's interesting to me because you've heard me talk about Ron Paul. I think that he provides important input to the Republican debate. He's not my candidate. But I believe that his views should be heard. And it infuriates me that the corporate media has marginalized him to such a degree, because he has been a very consistent performer in the 13% to 18% range in each of the primaries and caucuses that have been held to date. And that roughly tracks where Rick Santorum was until the Catholic bishops created the furor that has led to his recent surge. And it is somewhat surprising that Mitt Romney and Ron Santorum are in a general Rick Santorum are in a general tie in the polls, particularly based on upcoming states like Michigan. And so to see them treat Ron Paul the way they do, and, I watch the PBS NewsHour virtually every night. Not that it is a perfect broadcast, but it gives longer time limits to most of the stories they cover, and they are much less sensational, of course, than corporate television news outlets. But even on PBS, they'll mention that Ron Paul has shown up in, say, Nevada for a caucus, but they rarely tell you what he said, talk about why his supporters support him, or even analyze his positions on the issues, except, of course, to say that they're outside the Republican mainstream. So take a look at Brad Blog and check out these reports. We'll see if Ron Paul or anyone else puts up any kind of static about the outcome of the Maine caucuses. And speaking of Santorum and this phony flap over contraception, well, over at Fox News, they're trying to keep it alive into its second week, and they're running out of gas. They're grasping at straws. In an exchange on the Fox News program called The Five, one of the right-wing hosts, Greg Gutfeld, said, you know, contraception and liberals, it's more about getting rid of the poor. Yeah, the right want the poor to get rich, and the left want the poor not to exist. Wow. Then Dana Perino, the cute little gal who used to be George W. Bush's apologetic secretary of the press, said, oh, it's not a bad point. Yeah, population control. So they really are desperate to turn this into the reverend right of this campaign season. And I'm hoping that cooler heads will prevail and that voters will turn out to be smarter than the Republicans think they are and we are. As I mentioned, I'll be on the road the next few days. Look for our next news and comment on Tuesday, February 21st. In the meantime, email Peter at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.